Good morning, Your Honors. Joseph Trojan for the appellant, and I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. This is actually an extraordinary case from a trademark stance because this is a case in which a jury awarded a $5 million verdict for willful trademark infringement against a company who owned incontestable federal trademark registrations to the mark.
Well, they can award trademark infringement damages for violation of a state common law trademark that was senior to the federal mark, can't they? If that's accurate. I'm not saying that's the case, but if someone had a senior common law mark that predated the federal registration, couldn't they have a right to get damages for that?
That's true, Your Honor.
Isn't that really the issue here?
That is the issue, and the reason why that makes it all the more critical why there was a violation of basic due process in how the trial was conducted. Because on that exact issue, the court found a directed verdict on that issue.
But did that after most of your witnesses had already testified?
It occurred 2 days into the appellant's case in chief.
The account that I have is something like 11 out of your 14 witnesses had testified before the judge initially granted that motion. Is that correct? I think it came from your opponent, but is that correct?
I don't think it's a matter of the number of witnesses that testified.
Well, that's important to start with, because if that's the case, then at least those witnesses testified at a time when the directed verdict hadn't been entered, so there would have been no reason for you to hold back in examining those witnesses or presenting what evidence you had on the issue, which was at least temporarily taken out of the case by the directed verdict.
Certainly before the directed verdict was rendered, there would not be a reason not to present evidence on the issue.
So for those witnesses, at least presumably whatever evidence might have come did come, which brings us to the remaining witnesses. And the issue there seems to me to be what effort was made to ask the court for permission to elicit that evidence later. I mean, it seems to me the judge made the usual inquiries about anything else, and there's the perfect opportunity to stand up and say, well, yes, Your Honor, we have this evidence which we didn't get a chance to bring in because of the directed verdict. We'd like to bring it in, and the court presumably says, proceed. Was there anything like that?
There was nothing in the record to indicate the trial counsel requested after his case had closed that he be permitted to reopen his case in chief to defend on the trademark issue.
Did the judge reverse that ruling after the appellant's case had closed?
That's correct.
The case had closed.
The appellant's case in chief had closed. It was granted after the second day. There were still 2.5 days of appellant's case in chief. The appellant rested, and then after that, then the court reversed its directed verdict decision. And so basically, we rely upon Byrd, the Supreme Court case, that says basically the remedy here is a new trial, because and it's not an issue. Basically, we're all, as in a appellate setting, we're all used to what did you do to preserve an evidence? What did you do to make an offer of proof on a particular issue? Please show the Court of Appeal that somehow this was not harmless error, that somebody didn't fail to do the right thing to preserve it for appeal. And in Byrd, that's what Byrd is saying. In this particular context, when a plaintiff or a party, an issue has been removed, then there's no reason for them to be presenting evidence or making an offer of proof on a particular issue.
But there's a reason then after the court changes direction. After the court says, okay, I've changed my mind, there's a reason for someone to make a proffer of evidence or submit evidence. It's hard for me to understand arguments that evidence was excluded if evidence wasn't offered.
Because you would not. I think that's what Byrd is trying to get at. That basically, if you're trial counsel, you're presenting your witnesses and you're presenting your testimony and arguments in a particular way to the jury. And if an issue's been removed from consideration, then the way in which you've you're presenting your case is also altered. And
well,
so,
what?
And that can't be remedied by simply going and saying, okay, now that my whole case has been shifted in order, now why don't you go put on a new case in chief or add to your case in chief in rebuttal? Because that's rebuttal.
Even that argument apparently was not made to the district court.
That's true. Trial counsel did not make that argument. And so I think at this point I would move on from this particular issue.
Okay.
The original directed verdict, when it was granted, was properly granted. This is a situation where a foreign corporation who did not sell in the United States set up a U.S. subsidiary in June of 1990. And it set up that subsidiary in order for that subsidiary to sell its products in the United States. It has a trading company, NETCO, that actually did the selling, through which it did the selling to the company in the U.S. Its subsidiary goes and registers the trademark rights. The parent company is fully aware of this because it starts putting an R in a circle on its products. So it's fully aware that its subsidiary has those trademark rights. It then continues business for 5 years. In 1995, it turns out that its subsidiary has $1 million debt. And it doesn't want any part of that debt, but it wants it to be paid off because part of that debt is also a
debt to whom? To what? Watec?
To Watec Japan, and to NETCO.
So Watec America owes Watec Japan $1 million?
That's correct. And part of that's owed to NETCO, which is the intermediary.
Is this debt is for
because
cameras that were delivered? It's for goods or for something else?
It's because the exchange rate, because the delay in making payments and because the dollar was weakening.
Is this amount owed on goods delivered?
Yes.
Okay.
And it occurred because over a period of time on the exchange rate, there was this difference in the books between Watec Japan and Watec America.
Did Watec America have to make payments in yen or in dollars? I mean, what?
I do not believe there was anything in the record that specified that, so I can't answer that question.
But if parties can hedge in currencies if they want to eliminate currency fluctuation risk, and if they don't do that, and they owe somebody money in dollars or in yen or in rubles or whatever, and you know they, when it comes due, they have to deliver normally the currency that's due.
That I don't think that that's an issue in dispute. Okay. The issue really here is that the parent corporation wanted to find a way to be paid, because there was this $1 million debt, and its solution, it chose a solution. It chose to sell that subsidiary. So, and as a term of the condition of that, it would transfer the assets and the liability, and that they would sell it to a minority shareholder, Dr. Liu, and that Dr. Liu would ensure that the $1 million was paid, which he did over the next 9 months. So at that point, they have sold the company, the subsidiary that owns the trademark rights. And so they kept, since the agreement did not make specific reference to the trademarks, the question becomes, was it transferred with it when all the assets and liabilities were sold? And the answer to that is that the trademark only goes with the goodwill of the company. And when you sell assets and liabilities, the law presumes that the goodwill went with the company. And so we have a situation where the goodwill was transferred, and since the goodwill has to go with the trademark, it's presumed that the trademark was also sold.
Was there a disputed issue before the jury as to whether Watec Japan knew of the trademark registration? Was that a disputed issue before the jury is my question.
That Watec
was the evidence all on one side, or were there disputes in the testimony about whether Watek Japan knew about the federal trademark registration of Watek and Watt by Watek America?
Actually, that goes to the issue of fraud, which was actually an issue excluded, that somehow Dr. Liu had gone and registered these trademarks behind their back, which was and committed fraud on the parent company, and that was found not to be true. He was president of the subsidiary Watek America.
But my question, is there an answer to my question as to what the jury had on that issue?
I know the jury was aware that...
Not interested in evidence that was excluded for any reason.
I know that it is in the record that the notice to put the R in a circle on the products was sent to the parent company. And so they were aware that that occurred between the registrations were filed in, I believe, 92 and 93. They would have issued within a year of that. So sometime during that period when they still owned the company, they were advised of the fact that the registrations had issued and they should put R in a circle in there. So they were aware, they had to have been aware of the registrations for that reason.
Prior to the transaction you talked about with $1 million of debt being cleared up, Watek Japan owned a majority of the shares in Watek America. Is that
right?
Correct? Who actually managed Watek America?
Dr. Liu managed Watek America.
And that includes the time when he was a minority owner in Watek
America. That is correct.
So presumably he was the person, or his agents would have been the persons to communicate with Watek Japan concerning the registration and the requirement to put the little circle R onto to the name in the future. But was the evidence concerning that communication put before the jury?
I believe so. It's in the reply brief. There is a reference to that notice, and there's a citation to the record in the reply brief for that specific point.
Well, what is the error on the part of the district court that you are now challenging?
Well, the error is that it's clear that Watek America owned the trademark rights, and Dr. Liu purchased Watek America in 1995.
The federal trademark right, I thought you were saying.
That's correct.
Would that exclude a state?
But at that, then that becomes the issue that there was.
What did the district court do wrong?
By reversing it, the directed verdict was correct. There should have been a directed verdict on the issue of trademark infringement. On the issue of whether Watek America could have infringed those common law rights, because
and why would that be though? If Watek Japan had sold in the United States and established, put their marks in commerce in
right.
all 50 states, if they had,
there was
before Watek America registered the names for a federal trademark. Then why wouldn't they have a common law mark?
There was zero evidence in the record that Watek Japan sold in all 50 states. There was a limited evidence in the record that they sold in some states, small quantities. Maybe over a couple of years they may have sold on the order of it was very unclear in the record whether it was a few hundred dollars or up to $6,000 in merchandise. And so
if Watek America is their distributor, wouldn't the sales by Watek America be something that would also create a common law mark for Watek Japan?
Absolutely not, because if a company chooses to do business through its subsidiary and place those trademark rights in the subsidiary, because
the initial sales came before the trademark registrations.
That's correct, but that would only trump the trademark registration in the states in which it was shown that there was substantial sales, substantial and continuous sales.
As I recall, the directed verdict was based on the continuous portion, that is, of the district judge at first, at least, declined to treat the sales through Watek America or by Watek America as being for the account of or the continuous use of LaTeX Japan, and then subsequently he decided or she decided, and the reason for the change of mind was that, well, I guess the sales made by LaTeX America constitute use by LaTeX Japan, too, so I'm going to change my mind and take back the directed verdict. Was it the continuous part that turned the judge's...
The continuous part depends upon this oral licensing agreement between a parent and its subsidiary, and then after 1995 with Dr. Liu.
Okay, but the jury could find that... I mean, you can have an oral agreement. So, I mean, it could be disputed, but as I understand it, the jury heard from Dr. Liu and from some executive of LaTeX Japan, and the jury weighed the evidence and made a decision. So,
we have a claim of an oral agreement renewed every year in which there was not a single fax, not a single memo, not a single email.
Okay, but was there testimony from... some executive at LaTeX Japan that said, we had an oral agreement, we renewed it every year. In other words, argument there wasn't a fax or a memo seems to go to weight if there was testimony.
But
it's up to a jury to weigh it.
You have under 4 minutes.
Right, I have three and a half. We're talking about a complete absence of any evidence whatsoever with respect to an oral agreement.
Hold as a matter of law that you can't have an oral understanding unless you have written documentation of it.
No, I'm saying that when the only witness making any kind of such claim, which contradicts his own deposition testimony, and there's not a single document for such a long period of time, then yes, you can hold that there's simply insufficient evidence.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the Court, Orlando Cabande with Hanley and Grossfeld on behalf of LaTeX Company Limited and Genlock, which I'll refer to as LaTeX Japan. A few issues that I'd like to address that were raised by Mr. Trojan. The court in rendering its reversal of the JMOL provided ample opportunity to the Liu defendants to make whatever accommodations were necessary to present evidence. And in fact, the record speaks what efforts I went to make sure that I had an opportunity to present witnesses on our rebuttal case. With respect to the trademark issues, the jury was specifically charged, and if you look at the jury's findings, it was charged to make specific findings on whether trademark infringement existed. Those specific findings and the evidence that they had to find, and this is a jury verdict form that the Liu defendants had to prove and their counsel had to prove, the jury specifically had to find any evidence whether the parties entered a distribution agreement which would control their respective rights related to the trademarks, that a trademark license existed, that trademark license continued after the purchase of the shares by Dr. Liu, and that the continuing use of those marks after the agreement was breached, whether that constituted trademark infringement. Those were specific findings that the jury found, and those were findings that the court was impressed about in not reversing itself on the JMOL. If the court has any more questions, I can submit.
Oh, one question. In your brief, in talking about the federal registrations, make the point that the applicants did not disclose LaTeX Japan's ownership rights in the mark in the application. And I understand it's contested as to whether, you know, who had what rights in the United States at what time. But let me pose the question, what if the disclosure had been made? What would have been different about the federal registration?
I believe the Trademark and Patent Office, and there's several opinions that are not in the brief, would have to make an inquiry as to who was the actual owner of the trademarks. In this case, what Mr. Liu failed to disclose was that there was an agreement between the parties which controlled the respective rights in the trademarks. In this case, LaTeX Japan had sold these products, put into the stream of commerce, and by the way, there was evidence in the record that prior to the formation of LaTeX America, several thousands of these cameras had been sold. There's also evidence in the record, and Mr. Liu did not disclose this in making his registrations, that he believed, prior to the registration, it was a milestone event that these trademark cameras had gained national prominence through the sale of these cameras to the FBI.
Really not, a lot narrower.
Right.
At the time the registration,
I believe
Watech America is majority owned by Watech Japan. And so I don't know that there's anything exceptional about the trademark application. I'm just trying to figure out what difference would there have been with
I believe there would have been further inquiry, and the burden would have been on the Liu defendants to identify what interest this other entity had and whether the trademarks could actually issue to an entity that did not have actual rights to these trademarks. That's the inquiry that was denied.
But there's still – that still wouldn't necessarily affect a common law trademark that –
No. We own the rights. They knew we own the rights. That's an admission under the agreement. That's an admission he made to all the customers.
I don't have other questions.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Your Honors.
The evidence in the record of several sales of several thousand cameras, there's no best evidence of that at all. There's no – they have a documentation on appearing at a trade show. But other than the – as far as the number of sales, that was purely through the oral testimony of the president. There wasn't any evidence indicating – and even through his testimony, he once again admits that he did not sell throughout the entire United States. It's a simple fact that even those common law rights could not trump the entire federal registration in all 50 states. With respect to who owned the rights, if the president of a subsidiary company goes and registers the rights of that's his duty. He's not committing any kind of fraud against the parent company by going and advising and going and registering the rights for the subsidiary. There's no – in this agreement that he's saying should have been presented to the trademark office as part of the fraud on the trademark office claim that was dismissed. That was not a part of this case. They're going back and having to rely upon an argument that was dismissed from the case.
I think we understand.
Thank you.
The matter just argued is submitted for decision, and for this – this segment of the calendar is concluded, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise. The court stands in recess.
We will reconvene at approximately 11 o'clock.
Take it to the conference room. I don't know if he'll take these himself again. That was my only question. I'll grab these. Yeah, but then he threw me off by grabbing them in the last round. Okay. Well, just keep your eye out for the box. If he takes it, then, you know, he may. Well, he's quirky. No, no. All right.
Thank you. Thank you. here.
Thank you.